I trade freight services in association with Who1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Dr. Who podcast number
180.
And I am the master, and you will obey me.
And this, I saw that one coming a mile.
Kirby Bartlett Sloan. I didn't want to let you down, Reese. This is Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
Contact has been made.
Mary Lang.
Well, I'm Perpigillian Brown, and I can shout just as loud as you can.
Better version of the accent, though, eh?
Yeah, great accent. Yes.
Reese Parton. You were going to do that. Robert Haynes.
You wouldn't kill your own.
And judging by my list of people on Skype, Toby Haydock. But no, he's not here, but he is in mind.
What?
I'd love to, but...
Where's Matthew?
Yeah, where is Matthew? Maybe you lot scared him off. But it rather does segue nicely.
I'll text him.
It does segue nicely into the comment on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group from Deanne F.V. Heron, who said, yes, it's a bit of a saga, this, isn't it? Who said,
it really is.
I really love your podcast, but there are just too many people on it now. Well, not today, obviously, with Matthew not being here. I'm going to give it a few more episodes to see if the talking over each other improves. It's complete madness.
Now, well, about that, do you want us to talk over each other more so that improves, or do less of it? I don't know what you're saying.
Probably guess less, but I try and edit a lot of that out, but obviously I'll be trying to edit a bit more of it out unless it's funny. Most of the time it is, but only because I make it so.
Unless it's funny and makes people go...
Right, the comments, which obviously this is a long-going saga and probably the longest comment thread we've ever had on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which is quite nice in a way, because the last time we had a very long one, it was quite negative, wasn't it, if I remember rightly. But these are quite useful. Alan T. Butcher said, but previously it was incomplete madness. And Matthew, somebody or other, said... Mm-hmm. As both the new guy and the one who keeps doing well in the quiz, I suppose I'm the one to go. Now, who said in that somebody had to leave?
Yeah. No one.
However, he can go. That was a joke.
It seems like he decided he's going.
The implication was there were too many people, and I'm talking over people, sorry.
I feel told off.
Well, do you know what I think, before we move on to the next one? I'm not so sure there's too many people. Yes, there's too much talking over, but I do mention this during the show. But I think the people we've got on the show at the moment, yes, there's a few, but I think the balance is right. The opinions are right. The most of the comments are really, really good. And I'm quite happy with the ambiance of the 20 Megabyte podcast at the moment. And I like listening to it back when I listen to it. And I'm a fairly good judge of whether a podcast is any good or not. But I accept we're not perfect. I'd love to be perfect, but I don't think that's ever going to happen. And I do listen to what
I'll
the listeners
teach you one day.
Say. Thank you. I do listen to what the listeners say, and I take it on board, and I try to, you know, try to please everyone if possible. And I hope that if I do manage to edit out a bit of people talking over each other, it doesn't... upset the people who like the people talking over each other bits, maybe. I don't know.
I think it was Dr. Phil's comment about how he likes the range he had, because he listens to a lot of podcasts, and there are some that are more formal, and there are ones like us that are really informal, and he likes the variety.
Yeah. Well, I'm quite happy with the balance of people we've got on the show. I think we complement each other quite well. And I think Matthew's done really well to fit into an established group of people.
Except for this episode.
I don't think I've complimented anybody recently.
He may well turn up. You never know. Anyway, moving on. Andy Nunnith said, clearly has never heard an episode with Alicia. Well, I think probably most of our listeners at the moment have not heard an episode with Alicia. I think they might get quite a shock if they listen to some of the other episodes. And she keeps threatening to be available for the 200th. Well, I did the 100th, she said. But anyway, that's my catchphrase, apparently. Alan T. Butcher, but we can't lose our Matthew, nor indeed anyone. You're all just going to have to behave and respect Advent's authority. Now, I like that one. That's one that really sits.
I wonder why.
Because he's right.
And then, I like his next comment, though. Oh, LOL. Matthew's which on. Means he's not entirely serious at all.
I've got him. Matthew's on. Matthew's here. Shall I wind him up and say, sorry, we're a bit full today? I hope he's got a decent microphone today. Let's make pause while we wait for Matthew.
Hello.
Hey.
I enjoyed Planet of Fire. That was a good story.
Yes. You took a little long summarizing it, though, Adam.
Yeah, sorry about that. Well, yeah. Well, that's obvious why. Hello, Matthew.
Hello.
I'm having to talk quite quietly today because it's Sunday night and Deb wants to go to bed. Yeah, I did get your text.
Yes, I got your text.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, are you all right, Matthew? Are you available?
Yes. Well, as you may know from our previous Sunday podcast, I work until 5 a.m. my time on Sunday. Mm. And I slept through my alarm about an hour ago, apparently.
Oh, okay. Oh. Fair enough.
How do you know that you did? Because you missed your wake-up call.
Well, because the alarm was set for 1 o'clock, and the thing that woke me up was Kirby's text.
At least the computer was on.
Yeah. Yes.
True.
We're just talking about the comment thread, which was from Deanne F. V. Heron. And I've got down to the bit where... we got past the bit where somebody... sort of stood up for you a little bit. That was Alan T. Butcher. Then he said, lol. I don't know if he meant lol in my sort of direction or yours. Jeff Waddle said,
yours.
I can't hear anything but the rustling of sweetie bags. Then, of course, I made the most intelligent comments of the whole thing. Thank you, Deanne. That has been my gripe for a long time now, talking over people. And then I said, no, Matthew, you're not going, as you do not talk over anyone. Indeed, you are someone who always gets talked over. Just remember, I will probably edit out any talking over from now on. And then I went on to say, I must admit, some of these things, should we say things, that by the way, do make me boil inside. Sweet biscuit wrappers eating et al. But I love all my Cobra Zenters. Oh, God, I'm being all gooey now. And don't want to upset anyone. But I do. But that's the last time I'm going to say it. Reese Parton said, Alan, respect Adam's authority. Pa. Then I went on to say, I accept I do it as well, but I'm only trying to move the show on, mindful of time constraints. Then I said, I take all the intelligent comments. I'm quite impressed. Ironically, Reese, you behave yourself. Well, to a certain
I think
degree.
We need to talk about egos on this podcast too.
And then I went on to say, no comments from Mary Blitzlang, Kirby Bartlett Sloan, or Robert Haynes.
Who are they?
Demon. I need to make a point there.
But you're not on this thread, so it doesn't count.
You sent that at 4:42 in the morning.
No, I didn't.
And,
no, it says
and the rest, and the other things had been at like 2:38 in the morning. That's why there was no comments from at least us Americans.
Yeah, all right. Then. Well, Dinos Daniel says, most of the time it's not that bad at all. Last episode there was a fair bit for some reason, but I could not bear to lose anyone from the cast. Enjoy everyone's input too much. That's what she said. Kirby Bartlett Sloan. Here we go. It's the excuse list. I've been 1, working, 2, repairing Fred's computer, 3, sleeping to recover from only 4 hours of sleep on Sunday night. As the Boringer Blue Stabilizer pedant who just came in the last place in the quiz, I can quietly slink away if Adam wishes me to. What's that mean? You trying to get me to kick you off the show, Kirby?
You were.
People are volunteering left and right to go off.
Yeah. I think I'll volunteer then. And then he said, for the record, I had no snacks in the most recent recording.
And I have none today, too.
Good. If only you said you had none today, because the next comment's from Andy Nunny. Robert has only liked 1 post in this thread. Is this a record low? Of course, since then, he's liked every single one of them.
Yeah.
No, check that.
No.
I think he's going for a record.
Alan T. Butcher, the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast. Most of the time, it is not that bad at all. Thanks, Alan. There's one for the album cover. Wink. Anyway, don't go changing to try to please us. We love you just the way you are. And then I said, I was more thinking of changing to please me. Craig M. Hansen said, I think it's amazing how coherent it is with so many people. I like it as it is.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, she said coherent, I suppose, is another way of pronouncing that word. Reese Parton said, I was questioning the use of the word authority, Adam.
Reese, Alan,
behave yourself. Jeff Waddle said, it's great as it is, but not quite tartan enough for my liking. No offence, Jeff, but I do like to sort of understand what my co-presenters are saying.
Oh, you understand Peter Capaldi. If we had somebody sounding like that, that'd be all right.
Yeah, mind you, if it comes to people from Yorkshire as well, I know that Ian Kirk does sort of tone down his accent a little bit for his feedback. Sorry about the bing bong noise. I've got Facebook open, so I'm getting notifications coming through. Reese Parton, I could start rolling my R's to bring out my Scottish heritage. Oh no, that would be too patronising. Have you got a Scottish heritage then, Reese?
I do.
Do you?
Yes.
See you, I do pal. Too.
Stitch this.
I do too.
Oh. Oh, my tooth.
Down, down, boys.
Sloan is derived from O'Slohan.
Oh, well, there you go.
It says Wikipedia.
No, that wasn't Wikipedia.
Oh, the Celts are having a go at each other. As I said, stitch this, pal. Alan
and
T.
Kirby
Butcher.
Is a variation of Kirkby.
Is it? Can I carry on? All right. Alan T. Butcher. Shut up. Alan T. Butcher. Adam's authority is unassailable. Thank you, Alan. Hence the word
Adamocracy.
Adamocracy. Adamocracy. Yes, I like that word. And I think everything north of Portsmouth, don't mention that word in a post, that is a swear word in my language, can be lumped together as North Britain and is surely well enough represented. I'd just like to point out that Portsmouth are in League Two of the Sky Bet League. Southampton are in the Premier League.
So is Portsmouth like exercise a very bad word to say on this podcast?
Quiet. Andy Nunny.
Sorry.
It's all the fault of the colonials. They just don't respect the mother country.
Oh, now Russia. That's me. Too far.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Okay. Dinos, yes. Daniels. We learnt that from the Irish, which you lot sent down under. And Mary pipes up with, on other podcasts, there is more of a waiting to be called upon to give your opinion way of doing things. This is the, sorry, very small text. This is the format that listeners would prefer, question mark. Actually, what she said was, is this the format that listeners would prefer? I wish you would read this yourself, Mary, because I'm struggling. If so, then Adam would be free to summarise the topic story and would turn the mic, as it were, over to each of us in turn to add our opinions, comments and or corrections to what he said. Brief reactions during any of this would, of course, be happening, but long comments out of courtesy to the main speaker would be curtailed. Food wrappers, barking dogs and other noisy distractions would be muted out so the listeners could catch every word of our much heralded opinions. Doesn't sound like the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
No, I think
but
you're...
Would this be I'd preferred? Be right. And I said, with you lot, that would be impossible. We have the best podcasting team out there. Andy Nunny, I'm not enthused by Reese rolling his arse, though.
You keep it going.
Ian Kirk. Alicia probably rolls her eyes. Bye for now. Put that in there for a second.
And then I said to Andy, I wouldn't be doing it for you, Andy. I'd be trying to please our Scottish listener. Well, the one who posts on Facebook group, that is.
That's right.
We've got more than one Scottish listener. I'm pretty sure of it. But
I know, but
the rest
I only
of them
know
want to
Jeff
admit to it.
That...
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, Reese Barton.
I spoke over you.
Said quite a lot. Do you want to read these bits, Reese? It's a novel worth.
Reese never has any time.
I'm going to sum it up by. Oh, that's when I had time. That's when all those words came out.
Okay.
I'm basically going to sum it up by saying that some people might prefer that, but I personally wouldn't, because I think that what I love about this podcast is our informality and our fun. Although sometimes I do think when two people, Matthew and Kirby, talk over Adam when he makes a simple mistake, like saying the, was it Recovery 7 when it was really a different ship, and they both went, ah. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe they could lay off with that a little bit. That's not just talking over each other. That's just Reese saying some random noises to try and make a point.
No, I think the point they're trying to make is that they know more than me. I think I think that's what thanks, Reese. That summarises that quite nicely. Jeff Waddle then said, "It's fine as it is, Alan T. Butcher. Jeff's right, it certainly is. And Robert's giggling doesn't count as speaking over, right? Because that's my favourite background noise."
Fine too.
I then said, "Should I mention that when Alicia is cured of her teenagism, she's back on the show?" Of course, that's another 4 years.
Will that ever happen?
What, her being cured of teenagism is inevitable, isn't it?
My nerves are really teenage right now.
Oh, mine got over it. Of course, it was at, she had to be 20 before she got over it.
That's what I'm saying. She's got another 4 years. Nicholas Rowland said, "I don't think that anybody should leave the podcast altogether, but perhaps only have fewer people per show. Take turns each week, depending on who has access to the particular episode you were reviewing that week, or based on personal schedules or whatever. Adam plus 3 guests or hosts would be perfect, I think. People may disagree, but that's just my opinion."
Well, I'm no longer waking him up. He lived across the hall from me when I lived in the rooming house in Tennessee. So I'm no longer waking him up at whatever hour it was.
So basically he'd be voting for you to be off the show. Okay. Alan T. Butcher, "Far too sensible a suggestion would not be a good thing. Dinos Daniel, do not fix what is not broken. Adam Pearson, the others should just take notice when I say shut up." Then I said, "Sorry, forgot the winking face." Shut up.
You never say that.
Matthew Kressel, yes, in other words, "We should try to be more respectful of and not talk over each other for the sake of both our listeners and ourselves." Well, for the sake of me would be nice.
Well, Matthew, then said, "Matthew, you're very good at not speaking. You are respectful, speaking. You just don't get hurt."
Nice one, Mary.
Yeah. Well, just in case you didn't hear what Adam was going to say, it's his next post, and he says, "You're very good at not speaking over people," and I think too good at not speaking over people.
Reese Barton, "Where's the fun in that, though?" Then I said, "I think we're fine as we are, but a bit more consideration is required when one person is speaking, plus microphone muting when eating or rustling wrappers." Reese said, "Oh, I forgot the winking face too, Jeff Waddle. There's podcasts out there that are far more, for want of a better word, polished." We are extremely polished, Jeff, just like to point out. "Take away the talking over one another, the rustling of sweetie papers, and the Adam, and it wouldn't be so much fun." And then I said, "Don't encourage them." And Matthew Kressel said, "I seem to recall the chaps over at the Big Finish podcast having people complain a while back about them eating crisps the podcast."
I remember that.
They were recording it on their lunch break, so they would sit there and eat while they were recording it. Apparently, a lot of people got very annoyed.
can I bring something out?
Ooh, as long as it's not too painful or too messy.
It's my dinner time, and we record on Monday.
Yeah, can I just reiterate? Yeah. I don't mind people eating while the podcast is on. It's just the muting of the microphone while eating might be a better way forward.
This is just a demonstration as to what we don't like, so I'm not going to do it again, but it's doing this.
Yes, but can you do the same thing but with your microphone muted and see if it sounds any different?
All right, I'll give it a go. Here we go. Did that work?
That was much better.
Oh, that was great. Yeah.
All right, Dinos Daniel. "It was funny when they laughed at Robert Haynes in the New Zealander. I cannot remember who did.
Speaking of the Big Finish podcast, I was also thinking when people complained about that, I thought, well, when you start paying for the podcast, I think maybe then you can have an opinion on how it's made.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I wish people would pay for it. And you can donate, listeners, actually, funny enough, via the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Podbean page. And we would very much appreciate it. We don't want to try and turn it into a business like certain other podcasts are trying to do. But it would be nice we could do with the cash, because I'm well strapped, and it's, I know a certain person who lives in this house with me who doesn't like the fact that I have to fork out so much money to keep the podcast going. Moving on. Andy Nunney, it is the complete anarchy that gives your USP. BTW, the lovely Dawn, is half Scottish. Probably the half that drinks. Oh, I wonder if Alicia's got any Scottish blood in her. Kirby Bartlett Sloan, for the record.
For the record, my snack packet rustling on the show was meant as a joke. I was celebrating my ability to acquire British snacks. Remember, I jostled an empty Twiglet packet for a couple of weeks.
How was that impression that I did of you then, Kirby?
Oh, that was great. Wow, I had a
record.
Reese Barton, I'm sure the chaos from the comment on this post is just busy as any
as busy.
Doesn't say that though. It says just
busy. I left that out, I know. I just noticed.
So somebody called Philip W. Cerner. Right. You say tomato, I say spatio-temporal hyperlink.
No, I'll say spatial-temporal hyperlink. Sorry.
Cylinders aside, one of the reasons I listen to this less formal sense of fun... Oh, sorry, is the less formal sense of fun. I didn't used to have that as my primary taste in podcast, but having a variety of polished formal, less formal, etc. makes you for a divisive number of voices in podcasting fandom, and I, for one, appreciate you 20 megabyters. And then I said, oh, I'm running, this is coming to an end. Yet. It's coming to an end. I said, we will not be needing any feedback this week. This comment thread feedback. Is enough. Feedback, yes. Robert Haynes, hey, I love the informality of it all and the mistakes we make. I don't. What do I find? What I do find, sorry. What I do find,
mistakes you make.
Be quiet. I never make mistakes. What I do find hard at times is when I want to make a comment and nobody will listen. Will let me. I find those bits quite funny myself. But yes,
I know how that feels.
That's when he picks up the guitar.
That's when you just keep talking.
Oh, well done, Mary. Anyway, Adam. My suggestion to you, Robert, would be to come up with a short phrase to get Adam's attention. Something like, Adam, Adam, Reese Parton. No, even that wouldn't work. Knowing us, we'd make fun of him for it. Kirby Bartlett Sloan. Adam, Adam.
Adam, Adam could not possibly work.
So I did it again.
Adam, Adam, Adam.
And then Kirby Bartlett Sloan said...
It took less than a minute after I posted the previous comment for Robert to like it.
Yes. Robert Haynes said, nothing to see here. Mary Blitz Lang. But
I do want to hear from listeners if they enjoy the quizzes. I mean, we don't just do them to hear ourselves talk, or do we?
We don't.
Maybe we do.
Well, no, Adam does, but...
And I said, try it, and I will post a suitable response here. And the suitable response, no, we did try. I was going to say the suitable, response would have been shut up. Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I happen to like quizzes and was happy when we added them.
Now, I'm not going to go on about the next long-ish sort of thing we had after Reese tried to duck out of doing the quiz. Yeah. Because we need to move on to do.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the Planet of Fire.
There have been two responses to the thread we were just reading.
Were there? Probably by you and Robert.
There are. Robert Haynes said.
Yes.
That's your cue, Robert.
Mine hasn't updated. You'll have to tell me.
Okay. He said, honestly, though, there's not enough farting on the podcast.
It got two likes.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. And Ian Kirk said, great minds think alike, have a reference. I have a reference. I have a reference in the audio I just sent.
Okay. Yes, I've just received something on that line. Anyway, moving on. We have an episode to review this week.
We do?
And it's, well, not an episode, it's a story, in fact. It's Planet Fire, starring Peter Davison as the Doctor, the fifth Doctor, in fact, or as the Big Finish podcast will call Five. Not Big Finish, sorry, the Bigger on the Inside. Beg your pardon, Big Finish podcast. Yes, the Bigger on the Inside podcast. I forgot about the Bigger on the Inside podcast. I think I've got a few backlog episodes to watch. Anyway, there's some sort of what looks like Arabs traipsing across a sort of very rugged sort of landscape, which is clearly volcanic. And immediately you're struck by the beautiful setting that this on-location story has been given. And
looks like a quarry.
And they really did make perfect use of it. I do love
that. It does not look like a quarry.
No, it doesn't. Look like a volcanic mountain.
It looks like Lanzarote.
Yeah, it does.
Which looks like a quarry. Rocks.
Now, the little sort of, I don't know, it's a sort of house, is it? I don't know, that Timonov and Malkon are sort of having their little chat in. It's beautiful, isn't it? And it
yes,
really does fit in
yes.
to a sort of a outer world sort of setting. So a very, very good bit of research on whoever picked that as a location for that particular
scene. It was Fiona Cummings.
Yeah. Wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Anyway,
she had been to Lanzarote on a vacation previously and had brought back photos and had shown them to John Nathan Turner. Yeah, and John Nathan Turner decided, hey, we should set a story here. And the house that you are talking about is actually a bar there in Lanzarote.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite convenient
for
the crew.
Sorry, but I have to tell Robert off there.
And if you go outside...
No talking over there at all, was there?
I've got to tell Robert off for that because... he corrected Matthew by saying that it wasn't pictures, it was postcards. Postcards had pictures on them.
Yes.
God.
Yeah, so but she sent it. She sent it to him. It wasn't photos as such. She sent a photo saying troglodytes willing or something. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, she said on the commentary she brought John Nathan Turner 36 photos without any family or people in them as a way of showing the place off to set a Doctor Who story there. Which is why I said that, Reese.
Okay, never mind. Don't argue.
Adam.
Yes.
as I was trying to say, outside of that bar, the balcony outside of that bar is most of the areas where they were shooting, where you had this big long vista of the Lanzarote landscape, like places where the Master and Perry were confronting each other and stuff like that.
Where so Mary's they used
Where
Mary's quote came from.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you. Mm-hmm. So they're on the boat where Howard has sort of salvaged some things from the bottom of the sea. One looks like a plastic truncheon, I suppose, that's supposed to be platinum. Unfortunately, it doesn't look at all platinum. It looks
plastic.
But as I say, you have a shot then of Timonov and Malkon sort of walking out, looking over the scenery, and it's absolutely gorgeous, isn't it? And that's one of the things that's very striking about this episode. It's very pretty.
Did anybody find it weird, though, that because they're using the same location, when I was watching it first off, I was confusing the two locations as being the one area.
The same place, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found that when I was – because they're not – because they're so alike, I don't know. They could have made.
Yeah,
it a
what
bit they, more
what
obvious.
You're saying is that when Perry's, you know, drowning, it's quite clearly the same type of, you know, volcanic environment.
Yes.
As
you noticed the landscape when Perry was drowning.
Yes, a very hilly landscape.
And I didn't find it pretty. I found it, you know, desolate and I don't know, ugly.
Yeah.
No, I still think it was that scene. I mean, when
seaside.
No, the bit where Malkon and Timonov are looking over from like a balcony thing, and you see that shot of the sea and the
whatever. It's lovely. Yeah, that's what I mean. The sea. Yes.
That particular.
Yeah, the sea.
Mm-hmm. It's still. I still think it's a pretty. I think volcanic hillsides, and I think it was very pretty. I think it looked really, really good. So anyway,
well, you know what? Can I? Speaking of that, when I went to the Philippines, it was just I think a year or so after Mount Pinatubo blew, and to honestly go through miles and miles of area that's just covered with volcanic ash, it does look very startling, very alien.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very nice.
Exactly. So anyway, so we meet Chameleon, who's having a bit of a what they call a funny turn. Yeah, a bit of a funny turn. and then Turlo gets all sinister again, like the Turlo we've known from old, and rips part of the TARDIS apart because he hears like a distress call from a Trion ship, but we don't know that at this point. He's just being a bit cagey. And
he looked a bit uncomfortable rather than sinister.
I
didn't read sinister, but then I haven't seen Turlough before.
Yeah, a bit sinister.
You haven't?
Haven't you?
No.
What?
Oh, my.
Well, you have now. But the only thing that annoys me a little bit about Turlough.
You know, this sounds like we need to, I hope that Five Doctors pops up in the rotation.
That's what
one
she
of
said.
These days.
That's what she said, yeah.
Yeah, and as I was saying, the real thing I don't like about Turlough is his funny sort of Tourette's twitch that he's got. I find that a bit, you know, irritating. I don't know if it's a deliberate thing or it's just he has a sort of Tourette's twitch
probably
naturally.
Probably was.
One thing I found odd was during the commentary, Mark Strickson could not seem to remember any of this. He's going,
sorry.
Oh, I don't remember doing this. I don't remember doing this, but obviously I did it.
Yeah. What's the point of having more commentary then?
I had to watch him very closely because, again, not knowing Turlough, I thought maybe he had a disabled right arm because he does everything with his left arm. Oh. And it took a while for several scenes for him to finally do something that made me realize he has use of both arms. He just doesn't do much with his right.
Yeah, he is very hammy. But I don't know. I didn't like Turlough when he was first in Doctor Who, but he grew on me a little bit. And by the time this came along, I was quite disappointed he left because I was actually starting to like the character. But anyway, I'd just like to know, is Howard, the actor who plays Howard, is he American?
Dallas Adams?
I don't think so. Really? Because there were times when he was talking that he sounded like his accent was slipping.
Yeah, did he live in the UK for a long time?
I think so. Let me use that dreaded thing, Wikipedia. No, it says he's English. He's English.
I was going to say, because if he was American, he could have told Nicola Bryant how to do the accent a little bit better, that it could actually be convincing for British people, let alone Americans.
He was worse than she was.
I don't blame her, though, because she was thrown in at the deep end of it. Yeah?
Yeah. Can I just say, I was taking notes while I was watching this last night.
Notes?
What are notes?
And one of my notes is, quote, Perry and Howard can't act with American accents in the first scene, end quote.
There we go. Anyway, so the TARDIS arrives on the beach while Howard cons Perry onto the boat so she doesn't go on a little jaunt because he takes her passport and stuff. No, or does he leave the passport with her but just leaves her stranded on the boat so she can't catch the plane? That's right, isn't it?
Which
sets up the most wonderful scene in the history of Doctor Who.
Oh,
yes.
I'd question that, but yes, it's good.
Oh my goodness.
You should have known that this was coming.
Mary, female director too.
Thank you, Fiona.
Yeah, but, they
had their brief. They had to be bringing in more male viewers.
But is Fiona coming gay? Or I'm not doing that in a derogatory way. But
no, she's married. She's married.
It's just interesting that she was able to put in such a good scene. Anyway.
Yeah, she's married. She has her son is one of the backpackers in Ark of Infinity, actually.
Oh, there you go. Thank you for that fact. I didn't know that one before today. Now,
but
Peter Wingard.
The producer overrules the director on some things.
He does. Peter Wingard. He really does play this straight to me. He's very good in this.
I hope everyone saw the Peter Wingard video I put out on Facebook.
Yes, I did.
No, I didn't. I saw it on there.
I did.
I saw the jab at Adam. That's what I saw.
Anyway, right, so the Doctor and Turlough arrive at the archaeological sort of transit thing, and the Doctor goes all showy-offy and what he knows about the items they've salvaged, and gets a very, very curt look from Kurt. Do you like how I did that? But I do like, what do you think of the Doctor's outfit in this? I do like that. Can't speak.
I didn't like about it was how his braces kept changing when they would flip the image. So sometimes the question marks were correct and sometimes they weren't.
Yeah, they didn't think that one through, did they?
No.
It's funny.
Do you know what I did with that?
What?
I didn't care.
No, it's funny. I don't know why that reminded me of something.
I didn't notice.
During the commentary, Peter Davison even said, wait a second, were those really backwards on my braces?
Oh, there you go. I'll have to listen to this with commentary at some point. Now, what that reminded me of, and you've put me right off my track, something came to mind then.
That's our job.
Oh.
That was Perry for you.
oh, no. I forgot I was going to say something really interesting then. It's completely flipped out of my... See what happens when you interrupt me?
Oh, we're talking about Kurt
sorry.
Giving the Doctor a Kurt look.
No, it's not that. I'll have to rewind it, see if it jogs my memory. Something to do with his costume. I'll just talk about
it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, I remember now. It just reminded me of... Do you remember that that three-dimensional picture thing that you used to be around in the 70s, where you'd have a little disc of pictures, photos, like a slide thing?
Oh, yeah, Viewmaster.
Viewmaster, that's it. And there was a Doctor Who
still
one.
Still buy them.
There's a Doctor Who one for Cash Devalva. And I remember one of those pictures, I think, was flipped around the wrong way, quite visibly so.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was quite good because it was all in 3D. Cash Devalva in 3D.
Oh, yeah, my, that was real interesting, too.
Sorry, I didn't mean to bore you, but it was. If I'd said
so
it spontaneously.
You're saying that the 50th anniversary episode isn't going to be the only one in 3D?
Oh, no, obviously there's only photographs taken from the episode. But it's just interesting that they did bring out some 3D photos of a Doctor Who story. And,
yeah, what the Viewmaster Corporation would do once something became popular enough that they considered a show important enough to do Viewmaster things on them, they would send in a photographer to go in during production and take the 3D pictures.
Yeah, that was really good. I don't know if they're still available, but I certainly haven't got them anymore, unfortunately. And I would never have thrown them away. They probably just disappeared somewhere in the past. But
I know we have we've got a box of Viewmaster things down in the basement someplace.
Doctor Who ones?
No.
Yeah, I remember one of the pictures.
When I was a kid, I had a Star Trek one.
Yeah. I remember one of the pictures on there was of Davison wearing Tom Baker's scarf, and that was quite a good picture. I remember, it sticks in my mind on there. Yeah, carry on.
I remember having a
I doubt that
one.
Doctor Who stuff was available in the States at that time.
Probably
yeah, I was about to say, because I had one when I was a kid in the early 90s.
Yeah.
Anyway, can I go back to the episode? No, it's my
quite
fault.
A fair
we
bit in the, I think, mid-80s.
Yes. What, Doctor Who?
Yeah,
right.
In the US.
Oh, really? Okay. Can I move back? Now, Perry's looking through her stuff, and she finds her passport with a photo of herself, her younger self, obviously, Nicola Bryant, stuck on with blue tack rather than how it actually would be in a passport. But never mind. But it's a sort of American passport. Yeah. So that's right. But then that's obviously is a prelude to this wonderful scene. Because Turlo being very hammy to Chameleon, and we don't get to see Chameleon looking like Chameleon very much, do we? Because they just sort of changed him into Howard and painted Howard Silver as quickly as flipping it. Look at that shot. It's the cameraman must have been in his element. We start off with a shot down of her very slowly doing up a polythene bag. And he holds that shot of her midriff for quite a few seconds, then slowly pans up through the.
We've never had this much of a commentary on how a shot is made.
And then she jumps in. But
it was well shot.
And now the dawn of the DVD age was made for the ability to rewind that and pause it.
No, I question that. VHS. Anyway,
no, but this is a perfect pause, Grace. This is the VHS. We'll put a funny little sort of flashing line going through the screen, like that. This
right where you want to see.
Yes.
yes.
Anyway, but she's a bit stupid because she starts drowning very quickly. I don't know if it was an undercurrent, but she had a bag that was full of air to keep her afloat. So
it makes no sense.
She
starts swimming very expertly, and then all of a sudden she's flailing around like she has no clue what to do.
Well, I do like
Nicola Bryant says on the commentary that she went in to this production not knowing how to swim at all.
Oh, right. I don't know.
Oh, really?
But it's interesting, though, that somebody was watching that and thought that she was in real trouble, and they sent out someone to rescue her.
Yeah, a bunch of German nudists.
Yeah,
because
that beach was a nudist beach, according to commentary.
Yeah. So yeah. Lucky old Mark Strickson gets to carry the virtually naked Nicola Bryant onto the shore.
Who probably weighs about. I wonder if he asked to reshoot more than he does.
Yeah. I wonder if he asked to reshoot this scene a few times. I would have done.
I think she was so heavy. He just was probably glad just to put her down.
And that yelling in his ear would hurt.
Well, she wasn't yelling. She was supposed to be unconscious.
Yeah, she wasn't yelling. It was obvious she was extremely heavy.
But yeah, then of course they're in the studio shots, so she has to get back in a bikini, and somebody has to douse her with a bucket of water to make her look wet.
Best job in the world.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, also they probably had a fake tanda as well, wouldn't they? Because you know she would have had to have looked like she was had been on Lanzarote. I'm just pausing it because she looks great just as before he throws her into the bed. Carry on. Can you?
Can I just jump in and balance this out to balance out all this oogling?
Yeah, go on.
Please, Matthew, please.
How dare you?
But the thing is, Matthew, can I just interrupt you before you interrupt me? It's just a bit, just before he throws the cover over it, her boob is virtually falling out of her bikini top.
All right.
And it's so disappointing that just before you get, and he throws the cover over her. Thanks, Turbo.
Go on, Matthew. Go on.
It's a family show.
Okay.
And she was wet, right. Too.
Yes. Yeah,
However, 5 minutes later, she's dry.
Well, she's
it's true.
It's all been soaked up by the bedclothes.
Not her hair.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
What I was mainly going to say is, and I am aware that this story is primarily famous for this one particular scene.
Yeah.
And not much else.
Is it?
Really? You'll say that's all I heard of it.
Yeah, that was certainly the reputation I was aware of the first time I watched the story several years ago. To be fair to poor Nicola Bryant, who frankly has turned into a much better actress since then, since this was made.
Yes.
In this, she frankly can't act.
Oh, poor Nicola, but it doesn't matter.
It's just an acting job.
Yeah, I was about to say that. One of my notes from last night is this was her first acting job after drama school, and it shows. And it's almost like being perfectly aware of the fact that she may have had problems, they decided, you know what, let's degrade the character a bit. Let's turn her into a piece of eye candy, and hopefully nobody will notice.
And it worked.
I think Mary may agree. It's a bit gratuitous in what is supposed to be a family show.
Yes.
Yeah. And also, plot-wise, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, the only point of doing that is, A, to turn her into a piece of eye candy, and B, so you can set up a somewhat ludicrous situation where she suddenly gets drugged in the TARDIS.
Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, while you're doing that, I'm going to take a picture of the screen as it looks now, and then I'm going to post it on the Facebook group.
With Deb asleep in her bed, does
and
not
Adam.
Know.
Yes, Robert.
Adam?
Yes,
aren't
Robert.
You glad
Robert?
You've got a DVD copy, because now you can...
I've got both copies, actually. I've got this on iTunes and on DVD. So I've got it as many ways as possible.
Yes.
Yeah, I should really. I could have done a screenshot from the Mac, actually, but that might be pushing the machine a little bit too far, because it's trying to do you and record me and et cetera, et cetera. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. I can't talk to you, watch this thing, and post an image on the
Facebook
page. There's a Facebook page for you, Adam.
Well, yes. And then the next shot for all the mums earlier was Howard. Howard looking pretty
I've
fit.
Never ever heard any mums going on about Howard in this episode. But you have to be
I'm
the
not
first.
Making a comment. I'm personally not making a comment on it myself, but surely Mark Strickson looked a bit better than that.
I don't think so.
He looked super skinny and underdeveloped.
And his eyebrows were brushed upwards as well. I'll have to say, the only thing that gets me that he struck me as quite camp, Howard.
Yes.
Well, yes.
Or wouldn't, rather.
He was a bit of eye candy, yes.
I don't know about that. Anyway, right, so they
Can
end
I
up in the
TARDIS. Can I just
mention something? Well, I'm going to mention it anyway.
just something that was mentioned on one of the DVD features, and also I think in the commentary as well, that they could not afford to bring the full-size TARDIS to Lanzarote. And if you notice, nobody actually goes in or out of the TARDIS. That's because it was a 3-foot-tall model that they had brought with them.
There you go.
Is that anything like Master in a Box?
Anyway, the end of episode one, basically the Doctor and Turlo go to survey, you know, the where they've landed, leaving Perry at the sort of in the hands of Chameleon stroke Master. It's quite a good cliffhanger, really. Apart from the screaming, it's a bit unnecessary.
Yes.
But she was told to do that by Fiona Cumming, so you can't really blame Nicola Bryant on that particular thing. So
I just had this image of behind the scenes fans on set going, "The TARDIS, the TARDIS." It's only a model.
The only thing about, obviously, you notice about the TARDIS sets in this, which are really great. The Master's one with its black walls was a bit sort of pantomimey.
Yes. Yeah, because
I think previous to the Anthony Ainley Master, the Master's TARDIS was exactly the same as the Doctor's, but shot from a different angle.
Yeah, that was certainly the way it was in the Pertwee era.
They were saying in the commentary that this was the second time that the Master's TARDIS had been painted black. I forgot to make a note when the other
Castrovalva.
One was. Castrovalva. Oh, okay.
Right. Now
I've only seen Castrovalva once.
I'm reading Castrovalva.
Very quickly. Sorry to interrupt you. Never mind Castrovalva. But there's a scene that confused me a little bit when watching this with its subtitles of what I'm pretty sure is supposed to be Malkon and Timonov looking over, well, on their balcony edge, having some sort of argument. It said he came from nowhere, but because it says in the text, it says Malkon says, but the bloke's not Malkon, it's a completely different person, I think.
Ooh. Oh dear.
I mean, if it isn't Malkon, it's as an actor that hasn't appeared before or since in the episode, but if it is Malkon, it's a different actor playing him. So I'm confused.
You're confused?
I'm confused too, and I haven't even seen it.
Well, it's in episode two. It's they're on some sort of balcony looking over some.
Do you want to give us a time?
I'll try my best.
Stamp.
I'll have to go back now.
Don't bother.
You have to get off the picture of Perry.
Sake. Right. Okay.
Aww.
Here we go. Right. So it's 20. Oh, hang on, it's on play all, so if it's on play all, it's 27 minutes and 22 seconds.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Go to play all.
And he's with some bloke who hasn't been in the episode previously or, you know, ahead of this. And I just wonder if it is supposed to be Malkon, but it's actually a different actor playing him. I'm really confused.
Could well be.
Because it's
27 minutes, okay.
Because obviously, in when they got subtitles, if the character said something when he's off camera, they put his name on the subtitles and they put the name of Malkon for this bloke. Because I can't really believe he's squinting his face up because of the sunshine. I don't remember the actor being there for any of the he was only there for the studio stuff, I think. Oh, no, he was there.
By the way, the actor in question...
Malkon wasn't.
Malkon is Edward Highmore, whose son...
Freddie Highmore.
It's Freddie Highmore, who is a child actor who's been in all sorts of things.
Yes, okay.
Finding Neverland.
But he was there on Edward Highmore was there on location because he was there in the first scene of the episode.
I'm just
confused as to who this actor was that was with, and then it's him again. Oh, I'm really confused. I think they used a different actor for that scene. It's supposed to be him, but they've not ever mentioned it. Sorry? Hello? I thought Robert said something then.
He hasn't found it. No, I said they could have used another actor and pretended it was.
Yeah, but you would have thought they would have mentioned it. Oh, in this scene, Malkon is played by a completely different actor or whatever, but.
I suspect it's just a problem with the subtitles.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Because Malkon has that close friend, Amiand, And I wonder if that would be him.
I don't know. Might have been. I'm confused. It confused me anyway. Clearly, as it's taken up 5 minutes of the episode, me just going on about my confusion. Anyway, now, what do we think about Perry when she's running across the volcano side, chased by Anthony Ainley, who runs in a very strange
I referred to
way.
Your previous comment.
I've never seen the Master run before, so this was a first for me.
I think that's why.
Well, maybe because it isn't the Master, but it's Chameleon.
Yeah, okay. Good acting maybe. By then. I suppose you can say that. So good acting then by Anthony Ailey. Alien? Anthony Alien.
To be honest, I wasn't paying attention to him running.
And come to think of it,
Adam, himself may not run, but, you know, Chameleon being the Master may.
Mm. Yeah, go on, Robert. Mm.
And just remember, though, that... he's having a bit of difficulty wrestling control of Chameleon too.
Yeah, that is,
so that could be part of
that
it.
That was portrayed very, very well, even by the actor who played Howard. I think he did a good job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Yeah.
Ah! Yeah. You're right there, Robert. did a cat just jump up on your lap?
The noises Chameleon makes.
I can't imagine. I wonder if Nicola Bryant had any, like if she fell, if she's... really scuffed up her legs or whatever.
Yeah, I was
that
actually
landscape
looking for
that. Just looks rough.
Yeah,
it does, doesn't it? Yeah,
it's funny,
I wonder too.
Yeah, good point. But there's a bit where she tries to blackmail the Chameleon Master by dangling a high tech bit of TARDIS technology over the side of the.
I know that anytime they were showing those circuit boards, I was just laughing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, really. That doesn't look particularly grown, but never mind.
Adam.
Yes.
Adam.
Yes.
Adam. You missed an Adam. You say it three times.
Oh.
Yeah.
Adam.
It worked.
Product placement. Adam. There's a Citroen called the Adam, isn't there? Some sort of car, anyway. Sorry, carry on.
Two things. I managed to pull up a transcript of the story and looked up the scene you were talking about. The transcript I'm looking at
that's
is
how
the
you,
character.
You cheat.
Oh, for the love of God. Can we not go through this again, please?
Go through what? We know you look at Wikipedia, it's fine.
The egos on this show are overwhelming.
Please finish, Matthew. This is exactly what our dear listener, I wonder if I can get her name and edit it in later, sorry.
Deanne,
is it? It's what our dear listener Deanne was referring to. Did you see the picture I posted on Facebook, by the way, that I had on my screen at the time of your...
I haven't stopped.
Did Robert you see my answer, Adam?
It says, excuse me while I... Oh, very funny. Right, moving on. But sorry, Matthew, you were saying something. Matthew, yes.
Having pulled up a transcript of the scene you were talking about, the transcript I'm looking at lists the character as a lookout rather than as any other character from the story.
Yeah,
so it may be that whoever was doing the subtitles may have been
an idiot. Yes, thank you for that. Yeah. Right. Now I've established that whoever did the subtitles
also
was a
going
complete
back
idiot.
To, yeah. Yeah. Also, going back to what we were just talking about with Anthony Ainley running around, I couldn't help but think of him running around in the three-piece suit as being some kind of precursor to the John Sim Master.
Yes. Very good.
That's a stretch.
It does. No. No. the character in question does reappear at 38 minutes and 59 seconds, if you're watching all the episodes. And that's the point at which they call him off-screen. As you just said, Malcolm.
Funny name.
Because he says Timonov, and it actually off screen, and it says Malcolm, brackets, Timonov, says the word Timonov. And then, of course, the Shining Man walks in. Luca! Sorry, did I interrupt you there, Matthew? And he picks up a snooker cue.
Your timing marks are different than mine. That's weird.
Never mind. But Timonov picks up a snooker cue. I don't know if he's planning to play some pool or something like that. anyway, carry on. So like you say, Nicola Bryant, she slides down the side of the mountain. I'm surprised she didn't injure herself because she's got bare legs and everything. I don't know if they put a mat there for her.
I'm just trying to keep up with the timeline.
Yeah, that was the most honest moment out of Perry when she sits there saying, oh, could somebody please help me? My heart went out to her at that moment.
Oh, good. Well, she did a good job at that scene then. Good for her.
Yeah, one good scene.
You were going to say something, Robert. I know you were. I felt it in my bones.
No, just the cameraman was saying how she threw herself into those scenes, and I think she was patched up afterwards.
I thought she might have been. It does look like you would have, any normal person would have injured themselves. Because, I mean, volcanic rock is very, very, you know, sort of sharp.
Mm. Well, they said it was very sharp, yeah.
Yeah. So you wouldn't want to walk on it barefoot or with small shoes like she had. You'd want great big wellies or something, wouldn't you? Yeah, because she does a lot of sliding down the side. Doesn't she? And you think, how did she must have gone up there? Because there's no marks on the surface of the sand or rock. Yeah. So they must have made her go up by a different route, made her slide down to create those sort of marks. They must have thought it was quite effective, probably where the sand blows, the dust blows away, and they must have thought, oh, that looks really good, we'll do that. It looks quite like an alien landscape, etc., etc. So, anyway, back to the story. The Doctor meets up with Timonoff, and it's quite useful at that point. The Master turns up as well. Well, sorry, Chameleon Master. And there's a bit of a standoff between the Doctor and the Master, where the Master says, kill him, sort of thing, like he's done so many previous episodes of Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah.
I know. And,
Anthony Ainley just overacting like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, I don't know. Yes. I appreciate that compared to Perry and the way
he's waving his arms about during the whole Wretched Citizens of Sarn speech made me think of some bad 80s televangelist.
Yeah, but you know why he's doing that, though? He's supposed to be, he knows that...
Did I misread that?
Be quiet. He knows that he's trying to sound like a god to people who worship this Logar, so he's trying to sound like somebody big. So I haven't got a problem with him doing that. Mm. He's just being a bit like the Doctor was in... when he did the big speech to all the spaceships in Pandorica Opens, I believe.
A hedge.
Yes.
That was one.
So, episode 3 begins with a title sequence.
It does?
Yeah, and of course the Doctor.
Really?
The Doctor getting thrown to his death, not quite again, but he gets saved by... Can we remember? Turlo and Perry turning up.
Messing with switches.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's actually Perry who tries to...
So we stopped the killing because of that.
So Turlo was there too. Just because Perry's on screen doesn't mean you can't notice
that. It was Perry who made the Doctor realise it was actually Chameleon, not the Master. Isn't that right?
Yeah, because Turlo sent her in there to tell them that.
And then Malcolm gets shot
and he's behind the wall.
In a very camp, sort of pathetic sort of way.
You okay?
Did William Shatner just die?
I was just being shot.
William Shatner. It was fun.
I enjoyed recording this podcast.
Yeah, my wish for William Shatner to play the Doctor. Well, they did get an older Doctor, but not quite that old. Never mind. So anyway, the Doctor gets locked up.
Carry on.
And then quickly escapes. Didn't have a sonic screwdriver in them this time, though. Interesting.
Yeah.
Then a member of the Baby City Rollers turns up a few years after with his Baby City Rollers haircut. Must have been a big fan of Rod Stewart or something like that.
That whooshing sound was that going over my head.
You'd have to look up the Baby City Rollers and their haircuts to know what I'm talking about.
Jeff likes them because they wear tartan.
Yeah, there you go. And they were all,
that's
of course,
generalized.
Properly Scottish. Yes.
Reese, if it makes you feel better, it went right over the top of my head as well.
Like I say, Google Bay City Rollers, 1970s heartthrob group. Bye bye, baby, baby, bye bye.
Adam, I'd rather not have a flashback to a decade I didn't live through.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice one.
You have to bear in mind that I was a very young child at that time, and I used to hate things like Bay City Rollers and the Osmonds and Donny Osmond and Marie Osmond and all that lot. But now I actually quite like the Osmonds.
In fact,
the most ironic thing of that all, even though I didn't like the Osmonds and Donny Osmond and Marie, my favourite record at the time in 1972 was Crazy Horses by the Osmonds, and it still is one of my favourite records of all time. Back to Doctor Who. 1972, I was never mind.
70.
All right, 60. Six, sorry. Oh, you shut up, you put me right off. Anyway. One of the things I really like about this story is because there's lots of inside the TARDIS and TARDIS is, because obviously you've got the Master's TARDIS as well, and yeah. there's lots of jumping around inside each TARDIS. And I always like these sort of type stories that have got a lot of the TARDIS in it. Yeah. So the Master then demonstrates his phallic device, the yes. tissue compression eliminator.
Yes.
Tissue compression.
On the commentary, they were going, why is it called that? Because that seems to be the opposite of what it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing was, got me, because I accept the tissue compression, which obviously is living matter, yeah. and it can compress it. But he shoots a couple of spaceships that aren't
which
tissue.
Don't have any organic matter in
yes.
them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. Oh, yeah, and then at the end of it,
spoilers. They were leather.
Spoilers, the Doctor shoots Chameleon, who's a robot. And
right. I thought it
was
great on insulation and metal.
Yeah. Anyway, I know I get a lot of stick when I ever wear braces because of the way my trousers go up well past my belly button. And here's the Doctor with his braces on, with his trousers well up his belly button.
Never mind. Where he used his tissue compression eliminator, I thought that was obvious setup. He left one suit and that, you know, what's
right.
that mean then, hey?
right, Reese. I thought, okay, there's one suit they're going to use.
Yes, indeed. No, I didn't think of that one until afterwards and I thought, wow, yeah, never mind. I think my quiz this week's going to fall apart completely.
Too.
Well, there would be. Oh, right. Well done, Robert.
It's supposed to be so old, though.
Oh, I know,
though,
yeah.
They?
It's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that one, but I didn't really have a problem. Well, they could have looked a bit dusty, I suppose, couldn't they?
Yes.
Just to keep you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
So, there's a great shot when all of the elders enter the TARDIS and the Doctor shows a picture of one of the spacesuits sort of things, and they all go and they all kneel down. And,
yeah.
It was quite funny. And then they show a shot of the volcano with a little gas flame coming out of the dock of it. Nowadays, it would look like a proper, you know, erupting volcano, so they failed a little bit on that one. You right there, Robert?
Yeah.
You just jumped at the
cheapest. They were... There were some cases where they set off real smoke bombs inside of some craters.
Yeah.
And they had permission from everybody, except they forgot to tell the police.
Do you know, Kirby, usually my audio goes a bit funny at some stage during the recording. Yours went a bit funny then.
Yes, it did.
I did nothing.
He's doing it now, too.
You're going very weird, but not quite as weird as I go. But I just like to point
what
out.
What do you do to fix it?
I mute my microphone for a few minutes. But what I'll just say, before mine heads in that direction, because it hasn't done it yet and it's bound to in a minute, I'm recording this separately, so at my end it sounds fine. Okay?
Sorry. Okay, how do I sound now?
It's exactly the same.
Still bad.
But it does take a couple of minutes for it to go back, so you might be all right.
I think that's more an internet connection thing in Kirby's case, because mine does that.
No, yours is always perfect, Reese.
Oh, thank you.
Like you.
It's just learning from me.
Anyway, the moment where Perry...
Should I hang up and come back?
No,
now
on.
You sound
stay
fine.
On. Stay on.
That's yeah.
Fine.
That's weird.
The bit where...
I'm muted.
It's just a solar flare, so,
yeah,
you know, it's fast.
It. Let's get on. Perry knocks over the Master's little box. And then that's quite fun. I quite like that scene until she starts sneezing. What is the point of the sneezing? Please, someone say.
I know. So that she takes her eyes off the Master so he can run away.
Is that all they could think of?
Run away!
To make her take her eyes off him.
What else would make her take her eyes off of him?
I think something could have exploded on the TARDIS console that could have distracted her. Oh, I don't know.
That was a popular thing back in the
80s. Yes.
Unlike any of us, she keeps her eyes closed all the time she's sneezing.
Right. Yes. No, apparently it's physically impossible to keep your eyes open while sneezing, I've been told.
Well, I mean, in the sneeze, but then you open up in between, but she didn't.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't the best sneezing acting I've ever seen in my life.
No, it wasn't.
But she shouldn't have to do it anyway.
Yeah. Just a bit. It was a welcome to where we have to grade sneezing acting.
Anyway, Turlo receives a little sort of trinket from Timonoff, which is looks like a little key ring. I wonder if that's available on eBay anywhere, the Tryon logo thing that he ends up around his neck.
Misos.
Misos Triangle, but he gets a little... Yeah.
Misos Triangle.
Did I say TARDIS logo? I don't know. I'm feeling very sleepy now. I'm starting to lose it.
I know.
The plot quite completely. So, yeah, as the story develops, Turlo realises more and more that he's falling into the trap of not being able to avoid his, you know, capture from his own people. Because, you know, the more he tries to get away from it, the more he realises the only way out of the situation is by calling them. And the Doctor is a bit like the Seventh Doctor in this. He sort of more or less manipulates the situation into the Master being... You know, put in the situation where he's going to sort of grow back to full size and then die, in a way in which he was sort of murdered by the Doctor.
Yes, he was.
But occasionally the Doctor.
If
does
you're wondering
do
what I'm sniggering at, I'm seeing these comments on your picture, Adam, on the Facebook group.
Yes.
Okay, well, I'll look at those later. Now, during this, this sort of. Rubbish panting acting by Nicola Bryant. Nicola Bryant says one of my favourite lines that she ever said, and the way she said it. Now what are you doing? Which is exactly how she said it, but I just love that. I think it's so cute the way she. First of all, what are you doing now? And then he does something, explains about it, and then a bit later on, she does exactly the same sort of run over and panting, and it says, "Now what are you doing?" And I think it's so cute. Love that. I sometimes use that at home.
In that voice?
Yeah. Because nobody at home knows what I'm talking about if I do that. And there's some rubbish CSO of them peering over the box at the tiny Master.
They're shaking the camera too much.
But the Doctor is...
At one point they had to reverse the shot of them looking in because they had their eye lines wrong.
Oh, right, okay. But the Doctor does some good gloating in that scene. And I do love the way, and it's seamless, where they're looking in the box, and then the Chameleon Master walks in through the TARDIS, and that, you know, they look up and he's there. I think that really, really did work well. Impressed with that. What else we got here? Oh, yes, so Turlo calls his, you know, his help from his other people, I don't know, the Tryons. Then, of course, the Doctor gives Chameleon a heart attack by showing him a picture of Perry Topless. And then Chameleon begs to be destroyed with a tissue compression eliminator, which
he
wouldn't
asks
have,
for a tissue, does he?
Which wouldn't have destroyed him because he's not made of tissue. And then, of course, we find out Turlo's full name, and he sets the TARDIS to... there was a 15-second delay for the TARDIS to leave where he was and materialise where it did, and I timed it. It was actually 16 and a half seconds, so...
it seemed like they were having that conversation for an awfully long time. Yeah, but I kept going, get out!
Yeah.
Get out.
Yeah, I will say
to be
that...
entirely fair.
Yes?
Get out!
To be entirely fair, that's nothing compared to the 1 second that Amy was meant to look at the crack in The Time of Angels, or whatever it was.
But
she looks at it for half a minute, it seems like.
If you look at it, though, from where Turlo presses a button, he then says, a few seconds later, we have 15 seconds to walk out. By then, it was actually 13 seconds. So they did actually make it in time. So he said, he probably set it for 20, and he then said, we've got 15, because it already passed 5 seconds. So, yes, the Doctor... kills the Master and then looks a little bit upset about it, but you know, soon gets
his
over
brother.
It. No, yeah, I know that's supposed to sound that in the script, wasn't it? But I prefer to think that he said, one of your own kind. I always thought, even at the beginning, that he said that. So when I found out later that it was originally brother, I was a little bit disappointed.
Brother, yeah.
And then Turlo, because I prefer to think of him not being his brother.
Well, why? I'm convinced that Russell T. Davies was watching this in about late 2008, early 2009, because one of the lines that the Master says in this scene is that he'll plague the Doctor until the end of time. But not only that, but one of Turlough's final lines is, I don't want to go.
I know, I don't understand.
Very good. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, before everybody
else... Sorry, I just thought I'd interject.
That's good. Look, I can sum this episode up basically, although I've sort of taken the mickey out of a few bits and bobs on it, there's a few stupid things on it, but this is actually one of my favourite stories of all time. I absolutely love this story. Cool. And I also love the fact that then the case of Androzani. So, I mean, previous to this, you've got Resurrection of the Daleks. So it's one of the best ever runs of Doctor Who stories in the history of the show. So you've got Resurrection of the Daleks, you've got Planet of Fire, and the case of Androzani. A run of episodes of superbness. Yes.
So this we say goodbye to Turlough, and then the next episode we say goodbye to the Doctor.
Excuse me.
There's a lot to say goodbye and a lot of...
That was a much better sneeze.
Is Harry with us?
You see, Nicola Bryant, that's how American is supposed to sneeze.
Americans sneeze differently.
No, I just love it. It's such a good story. Really is fun. It's nice to watch. It runs along at a good pace. I don't find any of it boring at all.
Yes,
that's true.
It's just really, really good Doctor Who story. Love it. Right, who shall we go along with next? I think we'll go along with, I've got on my list here, Matthew.
Well, you may remember when we had Toby Haydock on the show a few months ago for the quiz, and you were asking him his thoughts on the episodes of Series 7 that were airing at the time, that he described the Rings of Akutin would be like Planet of Fire, and that nobody would remember a lot about it in 10 years' time. And I happen to agree with that assessment. The story itself feels like what it was, in that it was a shopping list put together by the production office and given to Peter Grimley. Because this story was the story was commissioned while King's Demons was still in production to get rid of Chameleon, because they suddenly realized how big of a headache the thing was going to be.
Yeah.
And it's there to write out two companions, get rid of another one, write out two companions, introduce a new one, was originally intended to be the final story for the Master, and then everybody turned around and changed their minds, and fit Lanzarote into the story as a location. And the story, personally speaking, I found episode 1 to go on for far too long, and it's just dragging everything out.
I disagree.
I loved it, but you're entitled to your opinion. So carry on, Matthew.
I was just going to say, I'm not quite done yet.
That was episode 1 he was talking about.
Well, there's some interesting ideas in there. And the basic story is basically an inversion of Eric von Däniken's Chariots of the Gods, Ancient Astronaut business with this primitive culture that worships these space travelers as gods, and the Doctor kind of ending up in the middle of that. As I said, Anthony Ainley is overacting his way throughout 3 and a bit episodes. God,
I thought.
Never.
And I think it's I think it's one of his weakest stories as the Master as a result. But Lanzarote looks fantastic. It looks like an alien world. So this was one of the few times they went on location in this era. Went out of the country where it was actually put to good use, unlike the two Doctors, for example, where you're sitting there going, okay, why did you spend all the money to go to Spain? And it's okay. There's nothing particularly brilliant about it. And I think particularly compared with Caves of Androzani, which is right behind it, there's a reason why it tends to be overlooked. It's okay. It's entertaining, but there's nothing particularly new or exciting or brilliant about it, I don't
think. So, in other words, it's all right.
Thank you. Well, that rather, as you spoke next, Reese, you might as well speak again.
All right. I think I'll agree with what I just said. I think it's all right. It wasn't anything too groundbreaking, except, obviously, we said goodbye to Turlough, and at the end, I thought that if that was the end of the Master, I didn't know that was originally intended to be. I thought that was quite dramatic, the way he just kind of ended up being burnt to death and disappearing at the end. And Peter Davison's shock was quite appropriate, I thought. But also I found it interesting that the Doctor didn't step in to try and help him. I know, it's shocking, isn't it, Robert? I also thought about how differently that would be played in New Who, and how I thought that you'd have Murray Gold's music, soaring music playing there, and I thought it actually worked a lot better without it, just because Peter Davison was really good in that scene. And I also thought, thinking of the music, that compared to the Ambassadors of Death, the music in this was much better than in that. It was
I forgot to mention the music.
And it, I can't remember which one it was, but it was one of the scenes, I think, when the Master first appeared, or no, when he was chasing Perry. I thought that was just really eerie and atmospheric.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the only stories of this era that I have to say that I do like the music from. Because, you know, I've always said I don't like synthesized music, but for this story, the music was fantastic. I agree. Thanks, Reese.
Yeah. I quite like the story, and I quite like the music, but it's nothing too extraordinary, so that's basically all I have to say. It was all right.
Thank you, Reese. Mary?
Well, I have to say that, for me, this was kind of a silly episode. I kind of chuckled all the way through it. I mean, to me, you know, the crowning moment was the Master in a Box. You know, to me, that was so crazy. And I've never seen Anthony Ainley as the Master, and I thought he was pitiful during this, overacting or always doing that kind of laughing.
I love that.
I never once felt him to be threatening. And then we get to the people who live on the planet. They're all dressed like shepherds from like 30 BC, but then they're living in this extremely ultra modern house and have all this very modern machinery around them. And I think, well, you know, can't they update their dress a little bit? Including the men with all those kind of drawn up shorts, they really were in need of some athletic supporters there.
Yes.
Yes. So I had to laugh every time they were on screen.
Are you talking about Turlo when he was in his trunks?
Yeah, him too.
And he had his legs astride.
And I found Howard a little too close in age to Perry. And all I could think of is that if this is her stepdad, because originally I thought it was her boyfriend. But then when I found it was her stepfather, I'm thinking, whoo, her mother must be some cougar taking on a young man like that. So I thought that was kind of a little creepy relationship. And as already said, you know, Perry's, you know, swimming so well and then all of a sudden acting like she doesn't know what she's doing was a little odd.
Maybe she underestimated the swim.
Maybe. Well, but she had an awful lot of energy to throw herself around and keep yelling, you know, so. And the Master's TARDIS, when the Master's TARDIS falls over and he tells everybody, oh, I need your help because it's made of stone. When they go to lift it, I mean, it looks like they're lifting styrofoam.
Oh, yes.
It's lifted up off the ground.
It is.
Yeah, I forgot about that one. Well done.
There were just so many things that I found chuckle-worthy during this. But I do want to say on a more serious note that, yes, I've never seen Turlo before. I haven't seen any episodes with him. But I thought he did an excellent job of portraying, you know, being worried, being tense, being secretive. Mm. You know, because I wonder what's up, what's going on, and the way the doctor kept looking at him, you knew he was sensing something was up. So it was real interesting to see that story develop about his past and then coming to the conclusion that he needed to, you know, do the right thing and send
Can
for
I add
that.
To that?
Yeah.
I had seen Turlo before in a few episodes of Resurrection of the Daleks, and I quite liked him in that, but seeing this, I didn't know that it was his last story and that it was also Peter Davison's penultimate story. So I thought, wow, they did have a lot of drama in the classic series and they did have in-depth characters. What are people talking about? Then I realized, oh, wait, this is Turlo saying goodbye. No wonder there's a bit of a climax to his story.
Yeah, so we learn all about him and then he says goodbye,
So you haven't seen his first story, Modern Undead.
No,
I have it sitting on my table, but I haven't seen it yet. No.
Ooh.
Ooh.
You're in for a treat, Mary.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, good.
Yes. Well, I said except for
the problems with unit dating that it caused.
Precisely.
Well, I never date.
Never
unit
mind
soldiers,
about so unit dating. Kirby, sorry, Robert, your turn.
I'm a bit surprised. I thought Mary was still going on.
No, I'm done.
Oh, my.
Oh my.
Yeah, I agree with Adam. For me, I think I only saw this story about once before I got the VHS release. So it is, as Matthew said, though, it was forgettable, sort of. I seem to remember in my mind that I was thinking this was Turlough's home planet, but no, it wasn't. He'd got sent there. Well, his ancestors or father got sent there as part of a prison sort of recce or whatever. But I just found it very breezy, and as I said, I agree with Adam. The first episode just breezed along. It was very easy to watch. And I thought they made good use of the scenery, but apart from my problem, when I first watched it, sort of thinking the two locations being the same, it was confusing as I was watching. But yeah, I think Mark Strickson did say that when he was doing the story, he actually found he was enjoying the character so much he wished he hadn't decided to leave because it was his idea to leave. But I thought he was very, very good. Just sort of, I guess it's like a bit like the next story along. It sort of just hit the right notes, and Mark Strickson was hitting the right notes with his performance. And I just reckon it's just a pretty good. The actors are pretty good. The special effects weren't too bad, and I enjoyed the music. The synthesized music around this era, I just took for granted and found no real problem with it. But yeah, it's an enjoyable story, and it is a bit forgettable, I guess. There's nothing, but it's good to see Anthony Ainley as the master, I think. Precisely.
Well, I was just saying, Robert, I was just saying, because you reminded me of what Mary said about Anthony Ainley. It's interesting the fact that this is the first time she's seen him play the master, so it will also be interesting when she gets to see him play the master in some other stories later on, because obviously he had earlier Peter Davison, he was the first series, he was in virtually every story. That's so so it'll be interesting to see, because he does play the master quite a lot, how that develops in time. Sorry, Robert, you carry on.
I think he was fine in Survivor too.
Yeah, he was in
Survival.
Survival. Hey, we managed to correct Kirby.
Survival.
Well, one of the reasons why Ainley. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Robert was still talking, wasn't he? But you can talk if you like. I'll let you fight it out amongst yourselves.
I'll have you know I'm turning red because I made a mistake.
Oh, that's what that boiling sound is.
Really?
What are you going to say, Matthew?
Well, I was just going to say that the reason Ainley showed up so much is that because John Nathan Turner liked having him on the show, he apparently was actually contracted to appear so many times a season, or would appear in at least one story a season after a certain point. So that was the reason why he kept coming back. And I think that you end up where you do almost everything you can do with the character, which is why they tried to kill him off here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
carry on, Robert.
Well, that's basically it anyway. But yeah, I like seeing him as the master because I guess he was someone who was introduced as the master when I was actually watching the show, whereas I was just watching repeats of Delgado when he was the master. So I sort of identified this as being sort of my master.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because, again, for me, he was my master because I'd never seen Roger Delgado's performance of the master until after I'd seen Anthony Ainley play the part. Maybe I'd seen it, but I just couldn't remember it.
Before we move on to the next person to talk, can I just add to Robert talking about the landscape? And despite the fact he got confused, I do actually have to mention that gave this episode an entire feeling of its own. It gave it a really good atmosphere, I thought, and it was convincing that it was set on this alien planet.
And before we move on to Kirby, I just want to make Kirby feel a little bit better. Your little mistake was nowhere near as bad as Rufus Hound's mistakes on the Doctor Who live episode.
I know. That was terrible, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
All right, can I just say, can we lay off him?
Oh, yes, of course. No, I'm not saying he's not a Doctor Who fan. I could say
on him.
But they were quite big mistakes for such a big worldwide event.
I think he actually forgot to add the punchline to the knocking three times thing. I think he was meant to say, I was waiting for the last knock and then I was getting worried or something like that. But obviously Doctor Who fans went, oh, it was four times, you idiot.
I know, but they would do. And he accepted that they would do that. He said it was the worst place to do something like that. Places. I know, even Robert found it quite shocking.
I know.
So, now. On that note, Kirby.
It was all right. because everyone else has gone ahead of me, it's just, you've all, particularly Matthews, said what I agree with. Let's see, I first saw this on December 19th, 2010.
That's quite recent.
Yeah, that's when I got.
Did you have to consult your diary for that?
No, I consulted my email where I sent a tweet out about it.
Mm-hmm. But you keep all those emails. All right.
That says a lot.
It's Gmail. You can do that sort of thing.
Oh, my gosh.
You can also delete them, too.
And then all, I had to do was, then all I had to do was search for Planet of Fire. And it says December 18th, 2010, watching Doctor Who, Planet of Fire, Fifth Doctor, while completing Ubuntu updates. And then December 19th, so I went after midnight. Ubuntu updates done. Got about halfway through Doctor Who Planet of Fire, booting back to Win 7 for iTunes and calling it a night. Well, believe it or not, I never. Yes, it was a night. I never finished it.
What?
I actually found it rather boring back then and didn't watch it all the way through.
Blasphemy. Heresy.
Until 2 days ago.
Ban him.
Well, funny that we've just been having people having a go at us for people talking over people, and you lot are all talking over Kirby. Naughty. Yes. Points deducted for the quiz. Right, who was that talking over you, Kirby? That was Mary, Robert. Mary and Robert. Points deducted. Carry on.
And Adam.
Mary and Robert.
Watching it for the second time, this was only the second time I'd seen it, and it was okay, but it just was not one of my favorites at all. I found myself distracted by Lanzarote, Perry. And was while it was watching, while huh?
Perry.
No. And by the way, I had seen that scene before because it's all over.
I'm sure internet. You had.
In slow motion, then repeat.
That, I think that's the reason why I bought this DVD.
Truth will out, yes.
But this is one where I haven't even watched all the extras. I mean, just...
Oh my God, Kirby! What's wrong with you?
usually, I'll get one of these things and I'll watch the extras.
Precisely.
And
oh no, he couldn't get past that scene with Perry.
I just wasn't impressed. I've seen better Anthony Ainley stories.
Well, not Time Flight, obviously.
No, I have not seen Time Flight yet.
But this is better than Time Flight in regards to Anthony Ainley's performance. But carry on, sorry.
I agree.
Yeah, and Time Flight was also written by Peter Grimwade as well, who wrote this.
But Modern Undead was written by him as well, and that was pretty good.
There you go.
I wasn't impressed. I mean, it was okay.
It was all right.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Yep.
Can I add a couple of things to what he's just said?
Yes, of course.
Or not said.
I think the big thing about Modern Undead being in the middle and by far the best story Grimwade wrote is that I think that was the one that had the least amount of shopping list material from the production office about put this in.
Okay.
And also the fact that I think Time Flight was mangled as a production, that as a script, it's actually not that bad. But as a production, it was mangled because they did it at the end of the season. Mm. And why in the world the Master is in disguise in that story dressed up as Fu Manchu, I have no idea.
Shall we save the discussion about Time Flight until we've actually watched it, but carry on, yes?
Do we have to watch it?
At some point, yes.
Yes.
I've heard so many. I've never seen it. I've heard so many bad things about it. I'm not sure I want to see it.
If it was made now, it might not be so bad.
You've seen it.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite as bad as its reputation suggests, personally.
Well, wait and see. We'll talk. We're not. This is not a Time Flight review. We'll talk about that as and when that happens. No. Oh. Have you done, Kirby?
Yeah. I suppose. Good enough. I guess I'm being a Boringer Blue Stabilizer.
Never mind. Right. No, I did allude to the fact that Mary and Robert have points deducted. They haven't actually got points deducted, but I have notched a little thing against them because I thought it might be a good idea to try and make you lot behave yourselves, that if you did come up with a good point or do something bad, like talk over people, I would notch it against it. And when it came to a tie-breaker situation in the quiz... tiebreaker situation in the quiz, that will be taken into account. But at the moment, you're all right as long as you don't draw. Like last week, it might have meant that Mary and Robert lost a point in the tiebreaker.
But we only had one person that said that it bothered them. Everybody else said, oh, they love it the way it is. So.
I quite like this little idea for way of deciding tiebreakers, Mary. I think it was quite a good plan. It'll only affect you if it's a draw. So, I'll stop frowning. Right. I think it's about time you moved
on.
Can
I go back to what I was saying?
Oh, my God. Yes, of course.
Okay. Well, you were like, oh, my God, and I was just kind of like...
I got shocked. I was just about to move on to the next bit, and then suddenly we're rewinding. You can go back to what you were just saying.
Well, that's because somebody jumped in the middle... somebody jumped in the middle of what I was saying, and I didn't get to finish
that's
it.
That's unusual, isn't it?
I was going to go to my other point, which was... Yeah, that's the story of my life on this podcast. The other point is about the DVD that Kirby mentioned, because Kirby, in fact, cannot watch all the extras on the DVD because the producer of this DVD goofed up with the making of documentary and put in pop music and stuff in the documentary that was not clearable for the American DVD release. So at great expense, the DVD team had to come up with a second DVD master to actually cut out the entire making of documentary. So we don't have it at all. And on top of that, there's that absolutely not so special edition that was included on this DVD release where they cut it into 16. They cut the top and bottom off the picture to make it 16:9. They cut 30 minutes worth of footage out of it, so the story makes absolutely no sense now. They went out and went to Peter Grimway's. Yeah.
They added the ship, though.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they added the ship crashing at the beginning, which they went out and filmed a whole new scene for, and it feels like a bad fan edit, and there's just somebody went out and filmed something and stuck it at the beginning. And the ridiculous amount of ridiculous CGI they used in there. To try and make the story live up to its title, and it's like, how did people not get set on fire walking around?
Which is one of the reasons why I decided to just review the original broadcast. I completely glossed over it.
Now, I don't understand. I don't understand what you mean. Making of what is Return to the Planet of Fire? That seemed like a making of to me.
It was director.
It's short, but. I watched it.
It was them simply going back on location and talking about that. It is kind of a making of in its own right. But there's a much longer making of documentary with everybody who sitting down doing interviews with
people. That's true, Kelly.
I think it's called The Fires of Sarn or something, and they had to completely cut it out because Brendan Shepherd, the DVD producer, goofed up and did not make sure that the music was clearable to be released worldwide. As a result of that, as the result of the two debacles we just mentioned, as well as some other issues that were going on in the DVD range, he was let go from To Entertain, and this was the last Doctor Who DVD he worked on.
Now, what was that possibly called?
I think it's The Fires of Sarn.
Yeah. It's on the Australian DVD release.
Matthew,
it's on every DVD release. Yeah, it's on every DVD release, but the American DVD.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Can we move on to feedback now, please?
Just bored you out of your mind, didn't we?
Not at all.
No.
How could you say that?
Hello, 20 McMahon Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. That was my chair. I was telling. I don't know how long it will be until the next eruption.
No, thank you.
Curse those curried eggs. Part of Fire by Peter Grimwade. This is a story with the accent on exotic travel. This is the last story for Chameleon. Chameleon was less popular than Mel. Turlough was so distracted that he left Perry to sleep in a wet bikini. When the film crew turned up at the location in Lanzarote, they found it was a nudist beach. When Nicola Bryant was doing her drowning scene, there was a naked German hurtling towards her. I wonder if his name was Hans.
Please do not throw hands at me.
Don't mention the word accent. I did once, but I think I got away with it.
It's funny, but just before I met you, I was saying I wanted to travel, and I've still got 3 months of my vacation left.
My dear Perry, that is three I's in one sentence. You seem like a self-obsessed young lady. Bye for now.
That was Ian Kirk. Thank you, Ian.
And that's, that was great.
He can make the obligatory accidental second appearance in the show. Yes, we have some more feedback, unusually. Probably because I mentioned the feedback address last week. That's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Two bits of feedback, in fact, from Dr. Philip W. Cerner. But as they concern the Stones of Blood and the Keys of Marinus, I'm going to save them for later. But thanks, Dr. Phil, for sending them in. Yes. This is from Cora Warden. Sorry, I tried to send my feedback, but the file is too large. AOL sent the email, but not the file. I'll try to figure it out for next time. Thank you, Cora. That's a bit of a shame, but that nevertheless was indeed feedback. So, without further ado, let's talk about Doctor Who. And, oh, cool, that's going back to episode 1, 2, and 3. It's time for... You won't get this one.
No, we won't.
And we won't. Does this mean that Reese is going to be leaving us?
Yes.
What did you decide, Reese?
I'm staying, but I'm going to get no points, obviously, because I didn't take any notes.
That's what we want.
I didn't take any notes. I do not.
No,
have...
you read Wikipedia. You don't need.
No, I don't even have Wikipedia.
Reese, we want you to enjoy Doctor Who. You don't have to take notes if it affects your enjoyment of Doctor Who. Okay, this is just for fun, Matthew.
Well, it's not fun when we do it, though. Yeah, Matthew. Because we know who's going to win, we may as well not do it.
Yeah, we know he's going to win. Still, fine.
Okay. Matthew, this is your question. I've changed the order just for the sake of it. Are you ready? These are actually quite easy questions this week, so I hope you're not going to be silly. Who was struggling across the rugged stroke volcanic terrain at the beginning of the story? It was the one that was struggling, the one that was moaning that he was running out of energy and, you know. Not the one that was leading ahead. I can't remember his name. The one ended up being the leader. The other chap with the Bay City Rollers haircut. What was his name? Matthew?
Matthew.
That's hard.
Remember.
That's what she said. Probably, do we have to do this every week? Hello, Matthew.
Probably got a
Hello, Matthew.
Up.
I can hear you now. Carry on.
Hello. Okay, sorry. I apparently flipped my microphone off accidentally.
That was a bit silly. What great timing.
No. Would be my luck. It's a bit like dropping out of the podcast a couple of weeks ago. The answer is Roskell.
Is correct.
Roskell.
What?
Bit suspicious, but nevertheless correct.
Yes.
Yes. I'm happy to send a picture. I do not have any web pages up at the moment.
No. Right. This one's for Reese.
Oh, yeah.
Just drink a little, buddy.
Who was the ultra-religious elder played by Peter Wingard?
Ah, that's easy.
Yeah, it's easy.
Timonov?
Correct. Now, I will have to say, I think trying to put fellow or competitors under pressure by saying that's easy is very unfair, because it does tend to
thank you,
divert people.
I agree.
Mary.
Although, can I just say, one person called him Timonov, someone else called him Timonov.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well done. Well,
noticed that a few times.
Give you an extra point for that, because I hadn't spotted that one.
Wow.
No, I mean, joking, don't get any extra points in this game. Mary.
Yes.
Where was Planet of Fire filmed? Oh, that's easy. Oh, that's easy. I know.
Oh,
I know.
It's in Lanzarote.
Correct.
Oh, thank you.
That was easy.
No right. Pressure.
Robert?
I'll get a hard one.
Oh, my God. That's what she said.
You look good, Perry.
Did you have to? It's nothing. This question has got nothing to do with Nicola Bryant. Anyway. Right, really? It's like a blooming Carry On film, isn't it? I'd have to find some Carry On music to play over it. Right. Where was Malcon found?
Oh.
Oh, I know.
Oh, no, he was in the spaceship, wasn't he?
No. Born in Reese.
In the volcano. You were going to say Mary, weren't you? Wasn't he found in the volcano?
I'll give you a point for that. It was actually on the slopes of the mountain, but it was near enough. Kirby.
Yes.
What was the first word uttered by the Doctor in the story?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh. I know.
Wait.
Oh, wait, they were talking about the previous show, which so...
Oh, I know.
Yeah, Dalek. Tegan.
Correct.
Yes. Tegan.
Yes, that's it.
Who said Tegan? I might deduct a point for that. It was Daleks.
Yeah, but then he talks about Tegan.
No, the first word he uttered was Daleks. That was what the question was. Never mind Tegan.
Yeah, he was complaining about the Daleks. I remember that.
He only said her because she's Australian. Yeah. Right. Matthew?
Yes.
And we always need mentioning.
Yes.
What does the Doctor tell Turlough to do to calm Chameleon?
An algorithm.
No. Not algorithm.
Mary?
Mimi. Alpha rhythm.
Correct.
Me.
Reese. Reese.
Thank you, Beaker.
What is Perry's first word?
I wasn't paying attention to what you were saying.
That's a hard one, Ed.
Oh, for God's sake, shut up, Robert.
I know. Yes,
go on, Matthew, then.
No, Reese, try. Don't give up too easy. Reese, have a go.
No, okay, just
I think I know.
Go. Oh, go on, then. Go on, then. Give it to blimmin' Matthew. Go on. Matthew.
Hi.
Correct. It was so easy. It was unbelievable. Right.
I know. It's just, good Lord.
Right. Well, I didn't know either.
Right. Mary.
Yes?
Start again. I read that round the wrong way. What did Howard think Perry was supposed to be doing?
I know.
Going back to school.
Nope. Down in Kirby.
With her mother doing sightseeing.
Correct. Robert.
Okay. Yes.
And it's not a hard one before you say anything.
Wow.
Who does Perry think that a salvaged piece of statue of Eros looks like? Did you understand that question? You went very quiet.
No, I understand the question.
Right.
I don't know what she said about
it. Reese said, I know.
Elton John?
Correct.
Elton? Oh, yeah, that's right.
The answer.
Yeah.
Kirby.
Elton John.
Shut up. Kirby?
Yes?
Where does Perry...
I didn't hear the answer to the previous one.
Elton John.
Elton John. Okay. I just said it.
Right. Yeah, but after the... Never mind. Right, Kirby. Where does Perry plan to go with the English guys she has met?
Morocco.
Is correct.
Isn't that far from Lanzarote.
It isn't, right. So after that round, in last place with no points, Robert.
Yeah, rub it in.
Rob it in. Oh, Robert. Rub it in.
Yeah.
next with 3 points each, Matthew and Mary. In second place with 4 points, Rhys. And in the lead with 5, it's Kirby. This question is for Matthew.
Yes.
What are Logar's indications of the time of fire? So what indicates... Well, Logar gives these indications of the time of fire. What are those indications, to make the questions a bit more understandable for you? Ooh. There's two things. You get a point for each.
I think I know.
I know one of them.
Smoke and the an earthquake.
Correct. Not quite how it was worded by Logar. Logar said smoke from the fire mountain and the quaking ground, which is essentially the same thing. Rhys.
Yes.
What will Logar be sending soon, according to Melkon, as he preached to the citizens of Sarn?
I'm just going to take a wild guess, and it's one of those things that they kept talking about, the flashing light and the great winds or whatever, which is what Robert usually has.
I know.
Hang on.
Thanks, Rhys.
Who said I know first, Mary or Matthew?
Probably Matthew.
Matthew?
An outsider.
No. Mary, I'm going to give you a chance now because...
Oh, that's what I was going to say was the outsider, a visitor.
It was a sea of fire from the heart of the mountain. Right.
Oh. I can race with someone close.
Okay.
No, he wasn't actually.
Hard time hearing you guys.
Well, listen... Right.
Turn your hearing aid on.
Hello, Kirby.
Right, Mary.
Yes.
What is the name of Howard's friend?
I have no idea.
I know.
It was Kirby came with an I know first. Come on, Kirby.
Since we've joked about it, Kurt.
Yeah, so I thought that would have been I put that joke in specifically to give. Anyway, Robert. What does Turlo say when he realizes he can't just let Perry drown?
I think I know.
I know.
Well, Rhys said I know first.
Earthlings?
Correct.
Yeah.
It just goes, Earthlings.
Kirby. Who was the lucky cameraman who filmed Nicola Bryant's famous bikini and the boat scene?
Supposed to know who the cameraman Let me, is.
Hang on, that was my opportunity to say the catchphrase. You won't get amazing. This one. And anybody who does is looking it up on Wikipedia, but go on, have a go.
Exactly.
I'm not looking it up. I have no idea.
Anybody else?
The luckiest guy on the production?
Fred Hamilton?
Oh, good effort. No, it was John Walker. So, the legend, that is John Walker. Or should I say, the pervert, that is John Walker.
You put that in there just to knock me down from being ahead.
Nope, that's just the order of the question.
You bet. He was.
And after that round, in last place with no points is Robert. Next, with 3 points, Mary.
I know who the designer was.
In joint second place with 5 points, Matthew and Rhys. And in the lead with 6 points, Kirby. Right. Matthew.
Yes.
What is inside the Tryon artifact?
A data core?
Correct.
Not an apple core.
Rhys.
Yes.
What does Turlo call the Tryon logo?
Oh.
I'm going to try and figure out the pronunciation. Give me a second. I'm try and remember the pronunciation.
Look it up.
As long as it's close, I'll accept
it. The Meson triangle or something like that?
I'm going to give you that.
I don't know. It's pretty close.
It's close enough. One letter
Misos.
Out.
Okay.
Oh, God, I've just given the points to the wrong person. What a twit.
I'll have it.
Right, Mary.
Mary,
how does the Master describe the Doctor's TARDIS?
Big.
An insulting term he used for it.
Yeah. Oh, I know he insults it. I don't remember.
Anybody?
That clapped out piece of... No,
Nobody? Okay, the answer is preposterous Obsolete. Box. He calls it a preposterous box. Yes. Robert.
Preposterous box. Yes.
What TARDIS component does Peri use to try to bargain with the Master for her life?
It's the comparator.
Is the correct answer.
Very good.
Wow.
Kirby.
Yes.
What future Doctor Who storyline does the Master say to his adversary?
I couldn't understand you, sorry.
What future Doctor Who story title does the Master say to his adversary, i.e. the Doctor?
I know.
Wait. We mentioned at the end of time.
Yeah, saying.
Yes.
Yes.
Pardon? So what's the title?
The End of Time. Yes.
Incorrect.
He said that.
Right. Who's going to come up with the correct answer?
What?
But he said that.
What?
There are two then, because obviously he said that and whatever you're thinking of, Adam.
So when did he say the end of time then?
The point.
When did he say the end of time then?
At the end of the episode.
I mentioned it when we were discussing it, when he's in the flame and he's dying.
Right, well, that question
and he
is
says,
now,
I'll plate you until the end
be
of
quiet.
Time.
That question is now. That's not quite what I was thinking of, actually, but that I would never have counted that because it's not isolating a title. He's saying it as part. He's saying that in a sentence.
He didn't say part one or part two.
Right. What he actually said on its own was Journey's End. That's what he said on its own. He didn't say it as part of a sentence. He said Journey's End.
We had the theory that he said that his saying the end of time may have influenced.
RTD.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So what I'm going to say is that question is now void, and you've got this question now. How does the what?
But I got it right.
He did.
he got it right.
Anybody else like to jump in? Oh, all right then.
Not my game.
Okay. If you're going to get all upset about it, even though it's not what's down and
right.
No, it's not right though, is it? Because it was one of two.
Yes, it is.
Would like to if he actually said Journey's End and made my life a bit easier. Right then, next question. Oh, sorry, after that round, in last place with 2 points is Robert. Second to last place with 3 points is Mary. Then in joint second place with 7 points each is Matthew and Reese. And then the lead with 8 points, Kirby. Despite...
So here is where I'll start losing, because I tend to know more about the beginnings of stories than the ends.
Okay.
Because he goes to sleep.
Excuses.
This is for
Matthew. I agree, because I get interested in the story, so I kind of stop paying attention
to
the details.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you.
We all do that. Yeah.
Matthew?
Yes.
All right. How does the Doctor explain the Master changing into the Shining Howard? He uses it. Don't burp on my podcast.
I'm trying to remember.
Fart, okay.
It's a transition. I know
he uses a term.
It's a transitional stage, but I can't remember. I can't remember what the term he uses.
Okay, anybody?
Nope.
Okay, the term was psychomorphic fringing.
Oh wow! Same to you.
I didn't realize that.
Is that like CSI fringing?
They mentioned that in the subtitles.
Okay.
But I just thought they were just calling it that. I mean, anytime you saw that effect, they'd say psychomorphic fringing.
Well, there you go. Right. Reese.
Yes.
What word does Anthony Ainley pronounce strangely while gloating about the Doctor's inevitable death? Go on.
Do I have to say it the way he said it? Because it
no,
was demise,
way.
But he said
yes,
demise,
correct.
Didn't he?
He said demise, yeah, I think it's demise.
Yeah.
Right. Mary?
Yes?
What does the Master call Timonov as he enters his TARDIS with Peri? It gives him a put-me-down, but I don't think Timonov actually hears it.
Oh, I can hear him saying it.
Oh, no, that wasn't it.
Oh, no, he said it.
Darn, Let me think here. I know it means, you know, like you're a fool. I can't remember what the exact word, though. So I give it up.
Got it.
I'm having the same trouble as Mary.
Yeah, I can see the scene, but I can't remember exactly what he said.
So does anybody want to have a go?
Don't you burp.
Okay. The answer was gullible idiot.
I thought that was funny too when I saw it.
Yeah,
Robert.
There's a lot of funny lines in this.
Robert.
Ooh. Yes.
What has the Master removed from the Doctor's TARDIS?
as the temporal stabilizer.
Correct.
Ooh. Well done.
Kirby.
Yes.
How many spacesuits does the Master shrink?
Two.
Jeez.
Oh, yes.
And after that round?
Easy.
In last place with 3 points is Mary. In second to last place with 4 points, Robert.
Oh, yes.
Next with 7 points is Matthew, pretending to be rubbish. In second place with 9 points, Reese, and in the lead with 10 points, it's Kirby. Talking of Matthew.
Sorry, nice. I'm supposed to lose.
Okay, no. Right. That was the plan, but you're not following it.
So Matthew, if you don't watch the text or hear the commentary,
this is an easy one.
I don't take notes, and we're doing really well.
This is an easy one.
Yes.
So don't get annoyed with this. This is just the way the luck of the draw happens. Matthew, what type of gas does the Master want to control over?
That's easy.
I forgot.
Oh, I know
that.
Matthew's thinking.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Starts with N. Numismaton?
Near enough.
Yeah, numismaton.
Yeah.
Reese.
Yes.
Who does Turlo think will send the rescue ship?
I
hear a car.
That's outside, obviously.
Do you? is it the cardists?
No. But unfortunately, my microphone won't pick it up. But
Adam's stomach rambling.
The one you're listening from can, because it's a dynamic microphone, etc. I'm not going to go into the science of microphones.
I'm just going to say I don't know. So if anyone else does,
go on then, Matthew. Sorry,
Tryon.
No, custodians.
Oh.
Custodians.
Yeah, I was trying to think of someone specific. Wait, I was just going to say his race.
Aren't they Tryons?
But specifically, but he says the custodians. Yeah. Obviously, they're Tryons. But oh, never mind. I'm not going to go down the pedantic role of things. Right, Mary.
That's why.
Yes.
What was a Tryon agent masquerading as on the planet Darvi? Because there was Turlo was reading off a list of where the Tryon agents were.
On
the
PowerPoint. No, I don't remember. Oh, yeah. I don't remember. They're all they're all undercover agents.
I know. Can I?
I know.
Hang on. Who said it first?
Me.
Robert said it first.
Go on in, Robert.
Wasn't he the lawyer?
No. Go on in. I'm not going to give any points for this, Matthew.
He was the tax inspector.
Yeah, you don't get any points for that, but yes, it was, yes. Kirby.
Taxes.
Yes.
What is Turlo's name and rank?
Vizlor is his first name. I don't remember his rank.
That's very unfortunate.
I know.
I thought you might.
Do I get 1 point for
Did you look it up?
I'll give you a point for Vizlor. Go on in, Matthew, for another point. Yes.
Junior Ensign Commander. And no, Reese, I did not look it up.
Right. And with one round of questioning,
I remember. Even though I don't remember his identification code, I remember that the info text said that it incorporated someone's birthday, like a production guy.
Okay. Well, with one round left, these are the scores as they are: with Mary in last place with 3, then Robert in second to last place with 4, in third place with 9 is Reese, in second place with 10. Is Matthew, and in the lead with 11, Kirby. Next question is for Matthew.
I need to start losing.
What is the name of the worst place in the universe, according to Turlo?
Brendan School.
Correct.
Yes.
Right. Reese.
Yes?
Where did the Master lodge himself in Chameleon's mind? What place? Where was the Master when he lodged himself in Chameleon's mind?
I know.
Thought we might.
Give it to Matthew, because I don't.
Yep, go on, Matthew.
Xerophus.
Correct.
Xerophus.
Mary.
Reference back to...
Yes.
What is the name of the only female character in the story other than Perry?
Zerosta?
Oh, that's good. Zerosta? Good one. Nice one.
Okay.
Zerosta, yes. Well played. I'll give you an extra point for that. So I thought nobody would get that one. Right, Robert.
I thought you didn't get extra points in this game.
Yes. I need them. I'm at the bottom.
Right. Robert.
Yes.
How do Timonov and his friends wish to die? It's a phrase that Timonov says. We wish to die with...
Oh,
I can't remember. Can I just add something?
Mm.
You know, when Turlo goes to rescue Perry, how come he just happened to have swimming grease under his shorts?
I don't know. Because it would have been a bit rude.
Was he planning on going swimming there?
That's very ridiculous. Walking around on the beach.
Well, he was on Lanzarote.
Yeah.
Right, so whose question?
Yeah, but he'd just come out of the TARDIS. He wasn't exactly planning to go swimming.
Never mind,
he?
Back to the quiz.
You never know.
Whose question was that?
Well,
I've lost the plot.
That.
No.
That was Robert.
No, somebody was going to answer what
it was Robert's the question.
Yeah, so who's going to answer the actual, give me the actual answer then?
What was the question again?
How do Timonov and his friends wish to die? Because Timonov says, we wish to die with our...
I'm having that as my imagine the scene. I know.
Kirby said. Go on, Kirby.
Cobbett.
Sins.
Correct. Right, the next question. We wish to die with our sins. Is what they Timonov said.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Wow. And then Emma comes in wearing the spacesuit.
Yes. Kirby. Right. What does the Master order the Doctor to do once the flame has become hot?
Burn, baby, burn.
No, he says, basically, to give you a clue, the Doctor was operating, there was a machine that the Doctor was operating, and he asked him to do something. And this is what the question is. What does he order the Doctor to do once the flame becomes hot? He says to this line to the Doctor.
I don't know. Turn it over to someone else.
Okay, Matthew seems to know.
To cancel the ray injection.
That's correct.
Wow.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, really.
Because right after that, he lists the story title that Adam insists he didn't say.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And in the end, that story title didn't make an ounce of difference to the final scores, which are, in last place with 4 points, Robert. In second to last place with 6 points, Mary. In third place with 9 points, Reese. In second place with 12 points, Kirby. And the winner, surprise, surprise, Matthew, with 15 points.
He doesn't always win. He doesn't always.
I don't always win.
Tell me it's
somebody has a point.
Not expect to do that well this week because this is, was not one of my favorite stories.
See, when you don't watch the info text or hear the commentary, it's like me watching new Doctor Who episodes once and winning.
Yeah. As the episode draws to a close, we can just gloss over a little bit of news that's been sort of bandying around over the last week. Only not much, but I was quite interested in the Earl's Court TARDIS thing. I thought that was quite neat.
Yes.
Yes.
Google Maps thing.
That was fun.
It was fun, I agree. Although there wasn't much, you couldn't really, I was hoping to go into the TARDIS console and walk a bit further than just around the edge a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, that was really good. Best television drama. Radio Times is trying to find the nation's most loved drama series with Doctor Who featuring in the final shortlist. Well, really, it should get the top mark, shouldn't it? Miracle Day Torchwood is going to re-air on BBC America. I'm sure you'll be scrambling to see that. First Doctor console installed at the Doctor Who Experience. Now, I really want to go back to the Doctor Who Experience just to see this and have my picture taken with it. So I wonder if I can persuade She Who Must Be Obeyed to let me go there one day. And the most important thing, William Hartnell TV interview discovered. Now, this is going to appear on the 10th Planet DVD, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I don't expect there'd be much reference to Doctor Who, but it's interesting to see that he was playing a part in a panto in 1967 when, obviously, he's got problems remembering lines, so how that came about would be quite interesting. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing that. And it said also at the Gaumont Theatre, which is now the Mayflower in Southampton, been there many a time and seen, in fact, Sylvester McCoy nearly sat on my lap at a performance at the Mayflower Theatre once.
Really?
But he was playing a play called... what was it called now? Where you're behind the scenes, but see, it goes from you're behind the scenes, and the second half of the act is the actual play itself. It's a bunch of actors. Oh, God, what's it called now? It's a really good play. And he was in it.
Yeah. You all are still fuzzy. Did you mention that the TV broadcast of the Proms concert is...
I didn't get to that bit. I was just glossing over certain things. But yes, the TV broadcast of the Doctor Who Proms is forthcoming. I'm looking forward to hearing that.
I don't
need to
be fuzzy anymore. I did trim my beard.
26.
You all talked over each other. That's unusual, isn't it? Yeah, so 26th of August. So I bet I'll forget it. I'm on holiday, actually, when that's on, so I won't get to see it.
I keep listening to it over and over, and I liked this one better than the last one. At least.
Right.
What? Why?
I don't know. I just wanted to do it.
All of the music this time was Doctor Who related. There were two long pieces last time, which just seemed
so she said.
To be out. Huh? What? I'm having trouble understanding.
Good grief.
You don't need to hear it.
No,
try and guess what he
yes.
said.
Just ignore it.
The word long, what does that normally bring up on this podcast?
Not <in there>.
Okay, go ahead. I'm done.
That's what she said.
Aww.
Yes, now. Yes, I just wanted to go back to the feedback address, 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. And also talk about the picture I posted on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which has got a load of daft comments afterwards.
Yep.
Brilliant comments.
I don't know. I think I should.
Yes.
Oh, my God. It is like a carry-on film. Yes. Yes, Robert says, excuse me while I go to the Zero Room. Jeff Waddle, Titty of Death. Reese Parton,
only one.
Jeff Waddle, no, it's the twin dilemma. And Robert Haynes, titties of death. Robert Haynes, no dilemma with me. Jeff Waddle, bra in of Morbius. And then again with Taron Wood Breast, where's me coat? And Reese Parton with the breasts below. And Mary Lang with, do I sense a Facebook page forming with its own fan club? And then Robert Haynes reminds everybody of Nicholas Nork's Facebook group created by Mr. Benjamin Shoveler. Or was it me? I can't remember.
I apologise, Nicola. I apologise.
It's quite funny looking at this thing that there's eight people that are actually members of this Nicholas Nork's group. Trevor Gench from A Doctor Who Podcast. Adam J. Purcell from A Staggering Stories Podcast. Alan T. Butcher. Christopher Lee Gallagher. Robert Haynes. Ben Shoveler. Dinos Daniel. Andy Nunny. I thought I was in it. Where am I? Oh, it's my friend. Sorry, my friend. I think it's 19 people. I'm rather surprised how many people are in it. There was only about three people last time. And I will say that off air, I'll have to tell you my favourite picture that I've seen of Nicola Bryan on the Nicholas Nork's Facebook group.
I'll go ahead and tell us now.
No, it's just a bit rude.
Yes.
I don't know if it's on there anymore. We might have taken it off.
Just checking the photos.
There's one particularly rude photo.
Oh, dear God.
No, none of those pictures. Somebody must have taken it off. Anyway, right, so... I'd like to say thank you, everybody, for being on the show this week. Next week, we'll be recording probably on the Monday, which is also the day I go on holiday, so I don't know how long it's going to take me to get the episode out, bearing in mind there's not much of an internet connection at Rookley Country Park. But nevertheless, that's... Also, Deb has requested we only record on Mondays as well because she's moaning about me keeping her awake by talking a lot. So,
like me.
Eh? Keeping you awake?
I like no, going back and forth.
The rest of the house awake.
Yeah. You like...
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
On that note, I think I will just remind listeners of what story we're reviewing next week. We're talking about Nicholas North.
I like alternating Sundays and Mondays.
That's the change. That's the change.
Does she as well?
Is that what you call her?
The president.
Oh boy.
The episode for next week. The episode for next week is Attack of the Cybermen. And unfortunately, I posted it down as episode 179, but it's actually... No, I posted it down as 180, but it's actually 181. Oh, dear, I've gone to come up in a bit of a cold sweat.
That's a six Doctor?
It is, yes. Indeed, a six Doctor episode. It's, in fact...
I want to make sure I'm getting the right one from Netflix. Yes.
And it's a more homage to Nicholas Norton. I mean, to Nicola Bryant. So thanks, everybody, for listening to the show, being on the show, and I hope we haven't talked over each other too much. And...
We don't talk over it.
There are.
What are we playing?
There are tablets you can take, everybody. Okay. See you next week. Bye.
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 Maybe likes going back and forth.
Oh, I'm sorry. With this group, you never know what you're going to say. Where's kind of.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.